It's Faith Radio Mornings here on the Faith Radio Network. Ted Ross and PK and Faith Radio Mornings. We have a special guest joining us now to talk about a serious subject.
Leslie Vernick joins us. She is just has over 20 years of experience counseling Christians from a biblical worldview. Her latest book is The Emotionally Destructive Marriage. One of the elements that can creep into marriage can be maybe an addiction of sorts. And Leslie, I really appreciate this latest blog post that I was reading through, because I think this is something that so many marriages are struggling with, but you can't really talk about sexual addiction. Good morning.
Hi, how are you, PK? Hi, Ted.
Hey, good morning. Yes, it's a serious subject that the church talks about to a degree, but probably not enough. Do you agree?
You know, I do. I do agree. And I think what's happening is that the church is more or less coming to accept that this is a problem everybody has, so let's just accept it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, you know, we've got to really deal with this. I mean, they're not saying it's okay, but they're saying, look, everybody struggles with this, so we just have to kind of be patient and merciful. And there's a truth to that, but they are failing to really help the addict come clean and do what they need to do to stay clean. And so, therefore, the problem in the marriage is getting worse and worse.
I think too, there's a lot of minimizing maybe in the minds of even Christians that are involved in this. They think they're just kind of skimming the surface and, well, I'm not hurting anyone. Just, you know, I'm going to go and look online or do whatever they do, thinking that it's an innocent kind of sin, but it's not really the case. It can be very destructive, can it?
It really is. It's very destructive to you. It changes your brain chemistry. It changes the way that you view women. It changes the way that you interact with your wife. And she can tell. And she feels that. And when she begins to talk about that, you know, what's wrong, there's something different, you know, and of course, then the man's defensiveness comes in. He starts maybe being defensive, or he blames her for something, accuses her of something that has nothing to do with what's going on,
mm-hmm.
but wants to deflect the subject. And so it just starts this really negative cycle in their marriage. And it really, really is. I've seen a number of marriages really end because this issue is not dealt with.
And with the way that our culture is going, Leslie, are you seeing more and more of this even from the other side, too, where women are becoming addicted and then the men are experiencing this? Are you seeing a little bit more of that increase?
I have. I have a good friend, Marnie Faree, who has written a book about her own struggle with sexual addiction. And I think that women can get caught into that. They kind of are drawn in for a different reason. They sort of get drawn in on the chat lines and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. for the romantic, you know, that kind of lure. But it still can become just as crazy making and addictive as the male part of it.
Well, you recently wrote about this on your blog, and the title of this was My Husband's Sexual Addiction is Killing Me. Can you give us just the premise of this, what the question was from one of your clients or listeners?
Yeah, every week in my blog I answer someone's question, and she has been married to her husband for 18 years. And, you know, he's always struggled with, you know, looking at other women and belittling her, and he was angry and moody, and she finally found out that he had sexual affairs outside of the marriage and was a sex addict, and she wanted to kind of process that and talk about that. I mean, he dumped this news on her, and he really didn't want to talk about it, so she felt like this time bomb had been put on her of what he was really involved with, but he didn't really want to talk about it anymore. It's like, okay, I confessed it, so now get over it, and, you know, let's make things better now. And she loves him. She wants to work it out, but she's very hurt. She's very depressed. She doesn't know how to handle it. She's a mess over what he's confessed, and he won't help her process that. And so, you know, I just need to forgive him and just need to get over it. And so his sexual addiction is killing her because she's, you know, going through these emotions, and she's struggling with, do I forgive him? How do I live with him? I don't trust him. I can't believe him. And it's caused a ripple effect in their marriage.
And I think that it's hard, too, in Christian marriages when this happens, because then we have that other dynamic, too, about, well, you need to forgive me, and you need, you know, there needs to be grace, and it gets a little convoluted that way, doesn't it?
I think it does. And, you know, and there's so much truth in you know, there needs to be grace.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much truth in that, yes, you know, that I'm not to judge you as, like, what's wrong with you? Of course, we could, you know, Galatians 6:1 says, when someone gets caught in a sin, you who are spiritual, restore such one in a spirit of gentleness, because you too can get caught in a sin. And so we need to approach this problem with, I'm not judging you as I could never get caught in a sin like you did. But I do have to say that your sin is affecting our marriage and affecting our relationship, and I don't trust you anymore. I can forgive you, but I still don't trust you.
Well, and I think it's... Yeah, go ahead.
The consequences of this kind of sin is broken trust, and that doesn't come back just because you forgave somebody.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think it's pretty easy to spot it, too, when somebody's not truly repentant. You know, maybe a sign of that would be, a sign of true repentance would be somebody saying, look, I don't deserve your forgiveness. I don't expect you to forgive me, but I'm asking for it anyway. Is that a healthy way to approach forgiveness?
Sure. And I'm asking for it, and I'm asking that you would give me time, that you would give me time to rebuild your trust. Mm-hmm. That's true repentance. And even, you know, sometimes I liken a sexual addiction, you know, when pastors or Christian counselors tell a woman, you know, you just need to forgive and, you know, put it behind you and just go from here. You know, if your spouse or your father or mother or uncle or neighbor molested your child, and they came to you and said, I'm sorry, forgive me, let me babysit your child, you'd be crazy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let them babysit your child, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't trust them. And yet somehow we're expecting a wife to somehow put all of this behind her and have this trusting relationship with someone who has completely violated her. Mm-hmm. There's no way that can happen. And so a truly repentant person would understand that and say, let me work to rebuild your trust, and maybe I'll never be able to rebuild your trust because of what I've done.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Leslie Vernick this morning, talking about sexual addiction and the devastating effects it has for both partners, really, in a relationship. We'll be back with more with Leslie Vernick in just a moment. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings at 6:43.
Faith Radio Mornings here on the Faith Radio Network, 6:45, and we are having an honest and helpful conversation, actually, with Leslie Vernick today. Leslie, of course, a licensed clinical social worker who's been a regular guest of our show for quite some time, and we have links for her website and her books at myfaithradio.com.
And we're reacting to a blog post that she has where the title is My Husband's Sexual Addiction is Killing Me, reacting to a letter that a listener wrote. Leslie, I think there's so many things that happen too when confessions like this happen, when you find out that a spouse has been unfaithful, and in this case, so many times, not just one time or, you know, just some odd thing like that, but this was repeatedly. Talk a little bit about what that other person goes through, because you feel like you're less of a person. You know, there's just a variety of things that we're made to feel like when somebody's unfaithful, aren't we?
Yeah, like I'm less than, that why was I so stupid that I didn't see this? Why doesn't he care about me? Why would he throw our whole family away for this? Is he really a Christian? Has he really lied to me about other things? I mean, you go through all of this stuff in your mind. And if it'd be okay with you, I would just love to dovetail a little bit about what Nancy Lee DeMoss just said in the ad, because I think it could be a little bit confusing when, you know, she says we're to lay down our life for, you know, and meet their needs. And that's true. It's gospel truth. But for a woman in this situation, sometimes she thinks, okay, then I just have to forget all my own feelings and just take him back and act like everything's okay. And I don't think that's what Nancy would say, and I also don't think that's what God would want. When we say that we lay our life down and meet someone's needs, what does he need right now? What do I need to do to help my husband? It's not to just cover over his sin and say, like, it's okay. But he really needs grace, but he also needs accountability. And he needs help to begin to go through the process of true healing. And so if a woman can be strong enough, even in her own emotions, to say, you know, I love you and I want this to work, but you have some work to do if our relationship's going to be restored. That's what he needs. He doesn't need someone just to say, it's okay and we won't talk about this again, because that won't help him.
Is it possible, too, that those that are wrapped up with this addiction get to that point of hopelessness and feeling like, you know, this is just part of me and it's always going to be with me. There's no use fighting it. I mean, what's your advice for somebody that's in that negative thought process?
I think that an addict can get to that place where, the Bible says that we become enslaved and we lose our ability to choose good. And so, but the addict literature says when someone gets to that place, if they can hit bottom, they usually come to a place of helplessness, and then they turn to God or their higher power, whatever the 12 steps program calls it now. But we do come to a place of brokenness, and I need God. But when we put crutches under people who are addicted and we keep propping them up and enabling them to function just fine in their life with no consequences, they really don't hit bottom, and they don't really realize that I have made a total mess of my life and I need help.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can continue to lie to themselves, thinking that, you know, it's not that bad and it's not hurting anyone that much and, you know, we'll get through this. And that doesn't help them to really give it up. They think they can have both their marriage and their addiction, and they can't if they're going to have a godly, healthy marriage.
And I think a lot of times, too, the spouse may think, well, I can love them more, I can fix them, but you caution against that, where we think we can fix the other person.
Yeah, I'm a counselor, and I'm this is my work, to help people change, but I can't fix anybody. And even Jesus couldn't fix somebody who didn't want to be fixed. You know, when he tried to warn Judas, or he tried to warn Peter, or he tried to warn the Pharisees, and they weren't hearing him at the time, they went out and did what they wanted to do. And so it's really important, you know, that you can offer help and support, but offer true help and support, not duct tape repair is what I call them. It's not really going to solve the problem. And so it's really important that, you know, she can say, you know, I'll stand by you. I have a woman right now whose husband, she's just found out, he's been visiting prostitutes, he's been in pornography, he's been going on Craigslist. I mean, horrible, horrible things. And she says to him, I will stand by you. But the minute you leave treatment and you don't finish your recovery and you relapse, I'm not going to stand by you. So the consequences are grave. I'm willing to forgive. I'm willing to work through this. I'm willing to go through your program with you. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to rebuild trust. But if you don't do the work, I can't do this.
Leslie Brunick again. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so she's holding him accountable in a most loving way for his good and the good of their marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Leslie Brunick joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings again, and she's a licensed clinical social worker and author of several books. We have those all linked up at myfaithradio.com. Let's say there's a situation where maybe I'll use the guy's perspective, since that's what I am. Two guys, good friends, let's say in college, and they go off into their lives, they get married, they start having their kids, and then one of them starts to stray down this path of sexual addiction and infidelity. The other in the friendship, and it's a godly friendship, wants to speak into his life and help him. What's the best way to do that? And, you know, maybe for somebody that knows a good friend is struggling with this, how can they effectively say, hey, look, and knowing that maybe the friendship's on the line?
You know, I think that's such a great question, Ted. And I wish more men and women would speak into each other's lives. You know, Hebrews tells us in chapter 3, that we should encourage one another day after day, lest any one of us become hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. And so we need truth tellers in our life. We need people who we trust that would have the courage to say, I love you, buddy, but I see you're going down a dark path and it's going to end in destruction. What can I do to help you? What can I do to help you? Because you're playing with fire. The Bible tells you you're playing with fire. You're going to burn up your life and your family. And to be able to speak with truth and grace about someone is a most loving thing to do. And they can get defensive, and they can, you know, say, I'm not going to talk to you anymore because I don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. But at least you tried. At least you tried. James says, you know, someone who tries to rescue someone from the brink of death can save their soul. And so I think that we have sort of played safe in Christianity, and we've not been willing to reach out to someone who looks like they're falling off a cliff and say, give me your hand and I'll pull you back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then to be able to withstand it. I mean, I did that with a friend of mine because I knew they were involved with somebody else, and I called them out in a loving way, and they denied it up and down, and yet I knew it. And their marriage crumbled and disintegrated, and we were really good friends. So it was a painful, it was a painful thing to go through that. And all of us Christians too, you know, and what do we do with that, even as the friend? Because I think that can be a very disappointing end. Again, I couldn't fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't fix it. And so all you can do is offer to help them. See, they have, you know, I talk about a food addiction. I think all of us can relate to that, because most of us can say, oh, you know, but, you know, you can cook for someone, you can plan their meals, you can grocery shop for them, you can sit with them while they eat their meal, but you can't control what they put in their mouth, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you can do all of that for them, and they still can overeat and not take care of their body. Mm-hmm. And the same with the sexual addiction. So you can't fix it for them. You can't change their heart. Only they can submit that to God, and God can change their heart. But they have to be willing. But it's very painful. I've lost friends over that too, and clients, when I've, you know, said, you know, what you're doing is really harmful, and how dare you, you know, talk to me that way. I'm saying, well, you're here for me to talk to you this way, but they don't. They still want to hear that it's okay. Right. And it's not okay, because I love them and I don't want them to hurt themselves. And I think, you know, faithful are the wounds of a friend. We don't intend to hurt someone when we say that. We intend to help them. But because they're ashamed of their sin, they're not open to hearing it at that moment.
Yeah.
In the last minute or so we have with you, Leslie, let's say this is fresh news for a spouse today. They've recently discovered or even just have some strong suspicions that their spouse is being unfaithful or wrapped up in sexual addiction. What is the first thing they should do?
You know, I think the first thing that she needs to do is get some help for herself from someone who understands what that is like. So there's lots of women who have written stories about their own husbands who have been caught in sexual addictions. There's support groups online. If you just Google Christian support for sexual addiction or husbands of who are sexual addicts, you'll find some resources there. Because I think just seeing that you're not alone, that you're not crazy, that there is a process of healing if your husband wants to take it, can give you a lot of encouragement and hope and can calm you down a little bit in the midst of your emotional upheaval. And then I think you need to have a really honest but firm conversation with your husband about, you know, I love you, but your sin is going to kill you and kill our marriage. Mm-hmm. I will say that very clearly, that you can't take fire in your lap without it burning you and burning your house down. And so to really, you know, put the boundaries down and the consequences. And if he refuses to listen, then understand there's nothing you can do to fix him. So now what are you going to do to stay safe and help your children stay safe from this? Because it has extreme effects on the children as they grow older.
Well, thank you, Leslie, so much for this helpful discussion about sexual addiction, and we so appreciate that. Blessings to you. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.